One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health here in Toronto. Cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, compassionate facility. Right now, it is Mental Health Awareness Week. This is the time when they need you most. This is the time when you can make a real difference when it comes to doing something about the mental health crisis and the devastating opioid epidemic, the overdose epidemic that we're currently experiencing, losing 20 people every day. They need your help. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand. To help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Backblaze. Backblaze offers unlimited backup of your files. Go to backblaze.com/CanadaLand for a 15-day free trial. Don't put this off. You need to back up your stuff. Backblaze.com/CanadaLand. This episode is also brought to you by HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy and convenient. I use HelloFresh. You should too. For 50% off of your first box, visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand and enter the promo code CanadaLand when you subscribe. Omar Mualem, writer for The New Yorker, for Rolling Stone magazine, for Wired, for The Guardian, and Special Birthday Boy.
Oh, you remembered. How sweet of you, Jesse. Thanks so much.
Omar, today for your birthday, we're going to talk about Jagmeet Singh's remarkable tolerance of an idiot that somehow qualifies him to run this country, I suppose, or something. We are going to talk about how Canada Land has shamed the profession of journalism, according to Christy Blatchford, and I might go off on the TIFF Film Fest. I just might.
Just for me, just for my birthday. This is everything I've ever wanted.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Rachel Haig, Dana Dragomir, Grant McCracken, Anne White, Aaron Reynolds, Aaron McLaren, Ben Cullen, and Grantley Franklin. Grantley, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because Canada needs more high-quality media criticism, and because Canada Land has exposed me to some of the most interesting voices in Canadian journalism, like Desmond Cole and Vicky Machama, for example.
This episode is also brought to you by Backblaze. Omar, what is Backblaze, you may be asking? I can sense that you were asking that question.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. What is it?
My friend, it is unlimited cloud backup for Macs and PCs. It backs up everything that you have, your documents, your music, your photos, your videos, your drawings, your projects, everything. Increasingly, I am learning that, like, I hate to say this, but my digital, like, archives are of absolute mission-critical importance to every aspect of my personal and professional life. The idea of losing it, and that kind of thing happens all the time. The fear is real, the concern is real, and the ability to access your data anywhere in the world, on your web or your phone, is mandatory. You got to be able to have access if something bad happens. This is not instead of a syncing or sharing service like a Dropbox kind of a thing. This is a great complement to those services because everything is backed up. 23 billion files have been restored using Backblaze. So it's not just people backing stuff up. They need to go back and get that stuff. And there's this great service where, like, if you're completely wiped out, like, they actually will send you a hard drive with all of your data on it, and you can restore everything that you had and need. It is a gimmick-free service. There's no additional charges or fees. Make sure you visit backblaze.com/CanadaLand if you are curious about this. And you can try it out for free for 15 days at backblaze.com/CanadaLand. Be smart. Do not lose your data. Give it a try.
It's,
we know you're above the most.
So,
we can tell by your votes. We all know.
That's it. It's okay. So, what this is, what this is, we don't want to be intimidated by hate. We don't want hatred to ruin a positive event, right? We don't want hatred to ruin a positive event. So, let's show people how we would treat someone with love. We welcome you. We welcome you. We welcome you. We love you. We support you, and we love you. We support you, we love you.
When is his Sharia going to end, Omar?
You know, Jagmeet Singh has been getting a lot of credit for channeling Jack Layton's, you know, love and courage message. I think he deserves more credit for not just laughing in her bananas pancakes crazy face. And he does for a moment. When she says that he's in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, he kind of giggles to himself. I don't think he gets enough credit for just, like, not just completely losing it ROFLing all over the floor.
She is an ignorant jackass, and laughing in her face would not be an inappropriate response. You know, getting angry back at her might not be an inappropriate response. I can't say what is the appropriate response, you know.
I mean, he could never do that. I mean, you don't really have a choice. You have to turn the other cheek in a situation like that. And even if he did start sort of condemning her and talking her down, the next thing that was going to happen is people would say, like, oh, he's stepping over free speech. This woman has an opinion. She's entitled to his opinion. Look, he won't even let her speak. If they, like, just dragged her off of the stage like that, that's exactly the criticism that would be happening.
Okay, well, look, in terms of how he responded, I mean, I'm not, like, I just personally don't feel like, I feel like he handled it very well, and there seems to be widespread consensus around that, and I don't have to deal with that sort of thing, and I would never, I don't know, stand in judgment. And he said, I have to deal with this a lot as a brown-skinned, turbaned man, and I think, like, I admire as much as anyone the grace with which he handled that. We're here to talk about the way that that message itself has reverberated through the media, and this is a bona fide viral sensation internationally. It has been picked up and turned into a little Facebook clip by everybody from, you know, Vice, I think, had 5 million views of their version of this. It's been a real boon to all the video suppliers. Guardian had 1.5 million. Those Now This style sites, the political left sites, have picked it up. Well over 10 million views around the world of, like, and it sort of filed under, look at this beautiful thing happening in Canada here.
It's been such a sensation that people have been accusing this of being a setup, that she was a plant.
Well, I know why people went there, because the timing of this couldn't have been better for Jagmeet Singh. Like, this is right as the NDP is getting ready to cast their ballots on who their next leader is going to be. I mean, it just couldn't. I mean, if you were going to plan something like this, this is exactly when you would have had it happen. But I do not subscribe to the.
No, Jennifer Bush is a well-known anti-Muslim activist. She's aligned with Rise Canada. This is just her at her finest.
Omar, does it matter that Jagmeet Singh's response was bullshit? Here's what he said. We support you. That's bullshit. You are welcome here. That's bullshit. We love you. Maybe he does, but I think, speaking for the room, that's bullshit. This is not a problem. That's bullshit. Like, everything he said, I think, is like, does it matter that it's not true?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think that it mattered that it was bullshit, because I don't think it was bullshit. I think that there is a better method to handle people like this. And it is not to throw back that same hostility, that same monstrosity and foaming at the mouth, but actually to welcome those people and say, like, look, we're not bad. We are loving people. We are warm, and this is the real Canada. That this is a place where someone like me could actually be the next prime minister, and you just got to deal with that.
Yeah, I am absolutely not saying, well, here's what he should have done. I mean, I have no, like, you know, I think he handled it just fine once again. But like, I mean, first of all, he shut her down in a way that completely used his position with the microphone, with the crowd on his side, to, without any anger or rancor, dismiss her entirely. And I think that she obviously deserved it. I mean, she was so ignorant in her assertions. I mean, you could call these questions, but they were assertions that he's in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, that he is trying to further Sharia law. I guess I can imagine, I'm not suggesting, I could conceive of a different response where you say, you obviously are very upset. You have some questions for me. Do you want to sit down? What is it you think that I've done? And maybe there is some sort of a discourse that could take place where she's disabused of her notions. And, you know, you never convince a person like that, but at least to like the many, many, many other people who are like fear that there is this movement towards instilling Sharia law in Canada. Like, just like, well, I'll actually talk to you and tell you why that's absurd. I guess I would rather hear that happen. I'm just responding to the fact that, like, I don't think we owe her support, love, welcoming, and I don't believe that that's actually how anyone feels towards her, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that actually some people do feel that way toward her. I don't know if you've read the Toronto Sun in the last couple of days, but there is not one but two pseudo defenses of this crazy bigot, a viral heckler, as I believe Joe Warmington called her.
Ooh, a viral heckler.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Warmington meets with her in an Indian restaurant to discuss her side of the story. I'm not kidding you. He actually interviews her.
Was her first video at Ford Fest?
Yeah, it was. It was at Ford Fest. No, so, I mean, he interviews her and, you know, he lets her say things like, the way things are going, we could end up like Saudi Arabia, where women have few rights. Yeah, I'm sure that's in the cards for Canada sometime soon. And she says that she's worked in women's shelters where she has seen wives, I'm assuming wives of Muslim men, with their tongues cut out. And Joe Warmington, who also has his tongue cut out, says nothing about this. He doesn't even use his editorial latitude as a columnist to form an opinion of her. He just gives her all the airspace she can. And then he just like offhandedly mentions that one of her grandchildren has a Muslim dad. And it's like, I want to know more about that. But he gives you nothing. And that's just one of the columns. I mean, and that's the less egregious one. Anthony Furies takes you down this rabbit hole of Anglo-Franco politics, all about how Jagmeet Singh has a problem in Quebec, and that's what this is really all about. I mean, you'd think that it's just so easy to condemn belligerent racists who just scream and yell and are so indifferent to the facts that they won't even bother to learn the difference between Muslims and Sikhs. But these two columnists really struggled with that.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, she was absolutely welcomed, and they tried to do some image rehab through Joe Warmington and Anthony Fury. The other aspect of this that's concerning to me is that, like, I kind of get the feeling like this is going to put Jagmeet Singh over the top. You know, it's showing that he can, I mean, maybe it's rational. Like you're saying, like, look, we've got a prime minister who deploys meme warfare, and you got to fight meme warfare with meme warfare. And Jagmeet Singh is the one candidate who can do that. But to have a candidate basically seize the leadership role through a meme, like, is that the level at which political discourse is happening? And that really is the media side of this. Like, and playing to an international audience. Like, none of this has anything to do with Canadian policy or Jagmeet Singh's record or the record of his opponents.
Yeah, I mean, politics has always been a popularity contest of sorts. And we might see in I guess, the next month when the NDP nomination happens, that this might be one of the better things that has happened for Jagmeet Singh. But I don't want to discount the fact that I think he's a fine politician. And his views on sort of the anti-religious or anti-Muslim laws in Quebec are some of the most reasonable within that party. I mean, a lot of the leaders in the NDP don't really have the guts to call these Quebec legislations out for being completely xenophobic and racist because they're afraid of losing the Quebec vote. Jagmeet Singh has, to his credit.
Yeah. We're I don't know. Guy Caron is on Commons this week talking about his, I think, rather internally conflicted position that government has no business telling anyone what they should wear. But we also need to be sensitive to the fact that Quebecers don't like to be told what to do by Ottawa. So let's find a balance. I think there is no balance. Like, either you can dictate that or you can't, you know? People can check out Commons if they want to hear that whole conversation without my color commentary on it. I don't know. Maybe the meme is a great way to determine who should run our parties and later our country. Maybe so.
Well, then our next leaders will all be kittens.
I, for one, welcome our feline overlords. Omar, we're going to get to Duly Noted, but first I want to thank our second sponsor, HelloFresh. You're going to be a dad soon, right?
It's true.
Look, Omar, I have few areas where I can lord over some expertise, and being a few years earlier to parenthood than you, I'm going to follow in the steps of every other new parent and patronize you with my advice and cooking and food and what to cook and what to cook for yourself versus the kid. This stuff suddenly gets a lot of scrutiny, and something that has been a very positive thing in my household is HelloFresh, which, like, we just always wanted to cook more than we found ourselves cooking, and the takeout thing, you know, makes you feel gross, and it's HelloFresh, you get to cook, which is something that I like to do in front of my kids and for my kids, and you eat healthy, and there's no food waste, and it just makes the whole process so much quicker because the meal planning and the shopping are out the window. Recipes are done in 30 minutes. They test this. I went to their test kitchen and saw them, how they test this. It's simple, easy to follow instructions that actually gradually get you out of your comfort zone and get you cooking things that you wouldn't otherwise cook. They source the freshest ingredients from local sources, measured to the exact quantity needed. If this sounds appealing to anybody out there and you're thinking, maybe I'm going to give this thing a shot, give it a shot with HelloFresh, because through Canada Land, you'll get 50% off of your first box. Why not see if it's for you? Visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand. Use the promo code CanadaLand. Omar, will you begin this Duly Noted session for us?
Oh, sure. I want to duly note some news that broke out this morning, Wednesday morning, which is that the National Post is unionizing. And they're unionizing with the CWA in a press release that acknowledges the fact this kind of feels like hell freezing over.
You know, you're in Edmonton right now, and I can't see your face, but I'm just going to go ahead and report to our listeners that your face has a shit-eating grin on it right now.
It does. I mean, I'm a freelancer, and I'm not unionized myself. I don't feel like I have too much stake in the National Post, you know, unionizing. But this is, I mean, this is pretty significant. This is the National Post editorial staff finally saying enough is enough. We're tired of being forced to take these pay cuts from Post Media executives while they collect their bonuses.
And benefits cuts and all and sorts benefit, of perk
cuts. And we're going to start protecting ourselves. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting to this is the National Post just, it keeps getting slashed. And I think that it does have to have something to do with the fact that they are not unionized. And the fact that they are not unionized, I think, has to do with the fact that it is a proudly conservative newspaper. But we see what the consequences of that are. A couple of years ago, when Post Media did this disastrous slash, eviscerated its payroll, a lot of that came from Alberta. And the reason that it came from Alberta and Edmonton and the Edmonton Journal and the Calgary Herald is because those two newspapers weren't unionized. So I see this as the National Post staffers really trying to protect themselves from what they see as the writing on the wall.
Yeah, and of course, the hell freezing over part, you know, just that they're like, how many editorials bashing unions in those papers? You know, like, look, I feel saddened to see the laissez-faire, you know, libertarian verve of early National Post. And like, there were certain ways in which, like, I kind of felt like, yeah, you go, guys. Like, they were thumbing their nose at the stodgy, stiff ways of other Canadian media. And they had an approach to their staffers where, like, sure, go ahead, do what you want. You can do a host a show on the side, go on a panel. You don't have to ask us for permission. We're not your mommy. You know, it's not like working for the CBC. Like, you know, this is a capitalist enterprise, and each one of you is free to pursue your own capitalist enterprise. And those politics were internalized by a lot of National Post staffers. So, you know, there's a sense of defeat in them. Like, just the writing is on the wall. It's obvious that management is just going to keep slicing and slicing and slicing, saving their own skins and paying off their debtors. So what are they going to do? They got to do this.
Yeah, and soon enough, they'll be admitting that racism is a problem.
Don't hold your breath. Duly noted. I'm going to talk about rosé as a fine accompaniment for stories about the cruelty of slavery in the United States of America.
Wait, are you duly noting something now? Is that what's happening?
That's what's happening right now.
All right. I thought you were just like advertising another product.
No. No, I'm talking about this story that scandalized us here in Toronto. Did it make it out of the bubble? Did you hear about this Toronto Star?
Yes, I did.
You did, of course.
It's a little awkward.
Yeah. So the wine column. We were curious if this was actually sponsored content itself, but it seems that this is just a regular occurring wine column in the Star. And hey, TIFF is in town, so TIFF takes over everything. Everything has to be about TIFF. So here's some wine to go with TIFF movies past and present. 12 Years a Slave, that goes well with rosé. No, oof. No. Bad idea.
Could you imagine how tiring and monotonous it must be to be a wine columnist sometimes? I mean, could you imagine having to come up with a new hook to drinking wine every week? And then, like, right before your deadline, you realize you haven't come up with something. So you pop on Netflix and you're looking through the movies that reflect the self-importance that you feel, but you don't remember why you feel it. And the last thing that I'm sure she wanted to do was write another wine story. I mean, to me, it seemed like this writer wanted to review some great movies. And
I don't
then,
know.
Alas, every last sentence had to somehow make a contrived onophilic connection. That sounds like an awful way to live.
I think you got it backwards. I think that a wine critic loves writing about wine, and it's the editor saying, it's TIFF, you got to write about TIFF. And that's how you get a sentence like, so, offset the searing cinematic discomfort with this smooth, dry, understated rosé. It soothes the senses with sheer...
Those are some beautiful alliterations there, by the way.
Yeah. And really, like, I feel like this, for me, is another symptom of this TIFF. Everything in Toronto just gets hijacked by this goddamn festival. And people are, like, actually afraid to talk shit about TIFF. And I don't really have much skin in the game. Like, my irritation, like, I just sort of avoid it. I would rather not pay three times the amount of money it usually costs to see a movie in order to see it 3 weeks early. So I don't really participate. I've been to a few of the parties and stuff. And mostly I'm just irritated when, like, it takes over neighborhoods and you can't get anywhere. And the more I've been reading about TIFF and the more I've been thinking about how it just completely subsumes public life in Toronto, like I came across this. Okay, this isn't even like I'm really just indulging my own pet peeve here. But like, this is a video that TIFF made, a movie that they made to commemorate 9/11. And this is a few years old by now. This is the 10th anniversary of 9/11. This is something that they produced.
Literally, like about midnight, I was dancing with David Lynch and Naomi Watts, and we're all doing some weird dance, holding arms together and dancing. And the festival was going so well up to that point, you know.
There started to be a buzz about a terrible accident.
People standing around looking sort of in shock.
We just kind of watched in horrified silence.
When the news and chaos broke out, people were definitely looking to the film festival for guidance.
What?
The untold story of 9/11 is that it was truly a damper on the Toronto International Film Festival. And Jay-Z's The Blueprint album. Let's not forget that.
When the news broke out, people were definitely looking to the film festival for guidance. You twits. You self-important twits. I'm digging back to find this, but like, do we really need that in Toronto? Like that sense
look,
that like,
Jesse,
like, this is the industry that is more important than anything. Like, there was another thing, Omar, and I'm sorry, I'm going to Drizzy, okay? A video came out of Drake's convoy of like Escalades on, was it Adelaide? This guy had a dash cam and there's like a Maybach. And then this huge mountain of a man, this bodyguard comes out of a vehicle and stands in the road and is directing traffic and impeding the progress of somebody's car so that like eight of these massive black SUVs can drive in a slow convoy, all of which were parked in the bike lane. Like, Drake has done some nice things for Toronto, but like, parking his fucking convoy in the bike lanes is not like, we don't need this shit, this like deification of celebrity in Toronto. I'm really wondering, people make cases for TIFF and the economic activity it brings to Toronto. Like, I just want these people to fuck off and go home.
I get that, but do you know what Edmonton would give for a TIFF? Like, do you know what others, how much other cities would love something like that, that kind of attention for a week? I mean, I don't know if Edmonton would give up Connor McDavid, but probably like Cam Talbot or something. I mean, this city just spent $500 million on a downtown arena just to boost its self-esteem. So, I mean, maybe you feel that way that, you know, Toronto becomes totally futile. Maybe you're talking downtown Toronto, but I mean, I think TIFF sounds like, I think TIFF sounds like a great thing for a city for the most part. Yes, it would be frustrating. And maybe, you know, after a few years of living your whole life in Toronto, you'd get over the whole celebrity thing pretty quickly. But I mean, I come from a place that actually calls itself Festival City, and the festivals here are just like so average.
Omar. It,
like we have this international fringe theater festival that is our TIFF. A fringe theater festival is our TIFF. Zach Galifianakis was once in town for it, and it was like an Easter egg hunt trying to find him at the fringe festival. Like that's how desperate we are for a little bit of celebrity validation.
Omar, that's adorable.
It is cute, I know.
And I don't know who Connor
Everything
McDavid is.
Everything in Edmonton is much cuter.
Yeah, but like I live in like a real city, like a world-class
you
city.
You don't know
like,
who Connor McDavid is? Oh
I
my
don't,
God.
But I like...
Oh, good God, you're so out of touch with the average Canadian.
One day when Alberta's economy forces you to this city, you'll learn that like it's like being a Torontonian should be like a New Yorker. We're not impressed. I don't care if there's a celebrity sitting next to me. Like we live amongst them. It's fine. Like I'm not I don't need that. That's when you've truly grown up is when you don't even want that.
Duly noted.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand.
Omar, we ran a very mean story. It was maybe the meanest thing we've ever run. It was a nasty bit of business.
Even meaner than the time that I said everyone at Sun News Network deserved to be fired?
Even meaner, perhaps, to some than that. And I was thinking about that piece that you wrote. That was the first thing you did for us. It was a piece by Robert Jago. Basically, it was an obituary for Conrad Black. Now, there was no confusion. We made it very clear that Conrad Black is still very much alive. But it was, you know, for future use, here is an obituary for Conrad Black that didn't seem too sad at his hypothetical passing. And I was very pleased that Jonathan Goldsby, our editor, commissioned this piece and ran it. Mm-hmm. And I was very proud to have published it. And the reason why is that Conrad Black has written piece after piece whenever the issue of Indigenous people come up, be it Indigenous people hoping that treaties are honored, or complaining the fact that they don't have potable water, or that more money is spent per child in the education of everybody else than their own kids, any of the various things that are these burning daily pressing needs that indigenous people are fighting for, that is Conrad Black's cue to remind us that by his historical approximation, when the Europeans came to Canada, indigenous people on this land were in the Bronze Age, barely, and they scalped each other and tortured their women and children and were constantly at war with each other. And he brings this up again and again.
And again and again and again. I mean, there were six instances of him saying this almost word for word, that First Nations people loved war and would torture women and children to death.
Yeah, and I'm just by way of summary, like
it's almost like a canned response for Conrad Black.
I mean, if you're talking about cruelty, I think that what Robert Jago wrote was a response to an endorsed, officialized cruelty, which is like he called it both inaccurate and irrelevant. And yeah, you know, like he takes issue with the accuracy of this historical depiction. But what spoke to me is, I'm like, who even the fuck cares? Like, people who are living here now are trying to fight these battles now because they are suffering now and because they're being screwed over now. And then to have this like cartoon millionaire be like, you were nothing when we got here, is to me the height of cruelty. And the fact that that is endorsed by giving this space in the Post is just this recurring act of just meanness that I was very happy to return in kind with Robert Jago's piece. And it was absolutely an assault on propriety and decorum, and it was in terribly bad taste. And Christy Blatchford called us out for it.
Yeah, she did. She had to protect her brethren, Conrad Black there. The guy's been through a lot. I mean, he's a former inmate. I don't know why you thought it was a good idea to, you know, continually traumatize this guy after what he's been through.
I have a very complicated relationship with Christy Blatchford that, you know, that maybe she actually should have talked about a bit more in her condemnation of Canada Land. But she's been on the show. She has been a Canada Land financial supporter, a generous one for a long time. She also is somebody who we've been very, very critical of. And she's been critical of me. She called my investigation of Jean Gomeshi McCarthyism. And, you know, she got spun by an off-the-record source and completely misreported something during the trial. I've been critical of her in some of her other coverage. I had respect for her as an old-school court reporter who I think would make the effort to learn about the things she wrote about. That respect is mitigated by some other stuff that she's written. And I think she's lost respect for us, as she writes in the Post, that she wanted to support us, but she had to pull her support.
Can I ask you a question about how you felt about a part of her story?
Yeah.
She called Canada Land fake news, or this article, fake news. I think she knows that it's not fake news. She knows it's satire. What do you think that says about how she views her audience, that she would just try to fool them into thinking that this article was actually what we know as fake news?
There's a certain pride at this point in being called fake news because of just the way that term has become such a ridiculous caricature. And I feel like I wasn't even clear as to, like, was she mad at us because she thought that we misinformed our readers that Conrad Black was dead and therefore it's fake news? Or was that kind of like a joke? Like, oh, they wrote an obituary for somebody who's alive. Let's call it fake news. It felt like a throwaway line. And I feel like she really is writing more and more in a throwaway fashion. And later she writes that we shamed the profession. I want to talk about this, not like, here's my response to what she wrote. I'm going to fire back at her. Like if I can, I mean, I'm involved in the story, obviously. So, but I can try to do some media criticism because like just looking at this in a kind of meta way, when Christy Blatchford, who is, I think, the highest paid columnist in Canada and one of the most widely read, either her or Coyne is the highest paid. People really love to read her stuff. When you've got somebody with that kind of a platform writing that you are fake news and that you've shamed the profession and you are a small media organization like us, that should be a crisis. You know what I mean? Like, and I was prepared for the crisis. Like, are advertisers going to pull their support? Are people going to refuse to give us interviews? Are we going to have all kinds of patrons pulling their money?
Come on. Are you really worried about that? I mean, my thought was, oh, Jesse Brown must be so happy that
right.
Christy Blatchford is filling that much space with the word Canada Land over and over again.
And that is the other perspective that we heard from, oh, you should send her flowers. She's done you such a great favor. What a great publicity this is for you. Because you don't need, like, all those people would be surprised by how many National Post readers are Canada Land supporters as well. And this idea that this is like a lefty bastion, you know, there are a lot of people who don't identify that way on the political spectrum who support it. So I didn't know which way it was going to turn. And I was sort of, you batten down the hatches and you get ready for like blowback support. And for a moment, there were like a couple people saying, well, we're going to kick in some dollars to replace Christy Blatchford's money. You know, so like, oh, maybe this is a huge boon to us. And then there were a couple of people who wrote me letters saying, yeah, I think you guys crossed the line with that piece. Nobody pulled their support to my knowledge, but they were critical of us. So I thought, okay, here it comes, the backlash. We're going to lose a lot of supporters. Omar, nothing happened.
No, I mean, anybody who already supports Canada Land knows that Canada Land uses a voice that is provocative, edgy, and kind of unapologetic. Not necessarily sensational, in my opinion, though I'm sure people would disagree with that. Look, I really enjoyed Robert Jago's piece, and I think you should be proud that you published it. For one, it's a great piece of writing. I mean, he's dunking on Conrad Black with the same kind of eloquence and at times florid writing that Black is so famous for.
Eloquent. Isn't it a purple overwritten? He made a pastiche out of Conrad Black's style.
Yes, exactly.
He did a fine job of it.
And that was pretty brilliant. But his point really is less about Conrad Black and more about Canadian media's hostility and indifference to Aboriginal history by letting Black repeatedly get it wrong. And he speaks about Indigenous people, as Robert points out, in a way that you couldn't about Jews or Blacks or even Muslims. And that says a lot. And it's not just Conrad Black. I mean, this whole week, some of the most popular, most widely read columnists in Canada have published nothing but apologism for racism in this country. I mean, you have Conrad Black's sort of tacit response to this, which is called Racism is Dying.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you have Margaret Wente in the Globe and Mail writing that there is good news about racism. And to my surprise, the good news is not that more of us are acknowledging its pervasiveness and that a little bit of it lives inside of all of us, but rather that we're making progress on racism. Like, who is arguing against that? And then you have those two clowns in the Toronto Sun finding some sort of way to legitimize this nutbag, Jennifer Bush, for violently berating a turbaned, brown, bearded politician for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and Sharia law, two things that have nothing to do with his faith, not that it should matter.
The fact that Margaret Wente and Conrad Black both wrote Racism is Not a Problem Anymore columns the same week is so fucking weird to me. Like, do they get on the phone? Like, how does that happen? That, you know, even putting aside like that these are the last people who have any authority to talk about the state of racism and the blindness they have to their own. Like, Conrad Black is always saying, like, how many times do I have to tell you I'm not a racist? Now, to continue, Indigenous people were like Neanderthals when we found them. Like, you know, and to not understand.
No, they were in the Bronze Age now. He used to say they were in the Stone Age, but now it's the Bronze Age.
I apologize to the litigious Lord Black of Cross Harbor, who in his piece, his whole column, by the way, was a long subtweet to Robert Jago, and ends, I think he's talking about Jago and Canada Land. They are drinking their own bathwater, and they will perish unmourned in their own bile. And I have to credit him for at least playing along with this contest of whose death will go more unmourned. All I wanted to say, Omar, is that it feels to me like, you know, then you have like Ken White big upping Christy Blatchford for protecting Conrad Black, like, oh, this chorus of powerful or once powerful people supporting each other. What struck me this time around, and the only reason I wanted to bring it up, is that it just didn't seem to matter to anyone but them. And it feels like this is what they're doing on their way out the door.
Yeah. But once again, it does reveal the overwhelming diversity problem in Canadian media. We can't deny that.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. Omar, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Jesse. Thanks for the dad advice, too.
You're welcome. And congratulations in advance. It's an exciting time. You can email me. I'm at jesse@canadalandshow.com, and I read everything that you send me. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Omar, where can people find you?
On Twitter as well, at Omar_AOK.
If you want to get our news stories, which we publish all the time and which are really fantastic, in your Facebook news feed, which is probably where you get your news, like us on Facebook. Or go to CanadaLandShow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is produced by Kevin Sexton. Tickets are going fast to our Hot Docs Podcast Festival show. I will be interviewing Daniel Dale, a journalist who has covered Rob Ford and Donald Trump, and I can promise you that this is going to be a riveting conversation. Google the Hot Docs Podcast Festival, and you'll be able to buy tickets pretty easily. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, please support us on Patreon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.